You haven't lived until you've heard the show Americans are talking about. The show that launches its listeners to the height of humanity. The audio hour that travels the landscape of adventure. The sound that comforts more than the clip of your first bolt. It's the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show!
We're Outdoor Adventure, so miss the airwaves. It's the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show. I'm your host, Ambelé, with you for the next hour. In studio with me this week is Greg Reynolds. How you doing, Greg? Fine. All right. Wow, see, when I take the summer, like I took 2 weeks off, and last week I came back in to do the show, and I couldn't figure out which buttons to push when. So, a little rusty still. It is the episode 107, Intro to Ascent Life, and so the last half of the hour we will talk mostly about climbing, and Greg will help us lead us through that. For news and events, news we have, there were climbers stranded on the Willard Spires for over 24 hours last weekend. They came down safe. A scout's family is suing over lightning death. Prep mountain biking has begun, and there's a car thief caught in Ogden Canyon. The Kokanee Salmon Run is coming up. So for those who want to get out and watch that, I think it'd be pretty cool. The World Cup Big Air Comp, one of the events has been canceled. And the World Slackline Championships have been abducted by the ski industry. There's been a 700-pound bear taken. It was like the Maine state record. We'll talk briefly about that because I think that's a sad story. And then the Kentucky, there's Kentucky Bigfoot hunting. For those of you who like Bigfoot hunting. For Ascent Life, we'll chat about first the blind ascent of the Grand Teton. There's speed records on iconic peaks. Mount Rainier bodies have been identified. Also, we'll talk about some gear. The Marmot Naboo, is that it? That's like a Star Wars reference?
Right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. OR incandescent hoodie, the Petzl and BD new helmets from them, and then some body packs I've never heard of. I don't even know how to say it. Arn?
Arn.
Yeah. Arn. So stay tuned for that in the second half of the hour. Also, for the skill sessions, we'll chat a little bit about how to understand insulation down versus synthetic. That's all coming up in the Ascent Life portion. So let's charge.
He summits with the agility of a mountain goat, flashes routes faster than UPS, is more intimate in the mountains than Jake Gyllenhaal. He's Todd to the Top.
Obviously, Todd is not on the line right now. He reached out. He said he is enjoying a day off in California and may call in during the second half of the hour. So we'll wait for him to call. In the meantime, shall we go over some news?
Let's do it.
There's been a rescue of the mountaineers involved in some strong winds, steep terrain up at the Willard Spires. I believe you've climbed these before, so you're familiar with the area?
Yeah, a little bit.
Did you read the story at all? Do you know anything, what happened to them or anything?
You know, I haven't read the story at all.
It was, Brandon Toll, this is from the Standard Examiner. Brandon Toll, the Weber County Sheriff, Search and Rescue Incident Commander, he said that Sunday's rescue of two mountaineers was the first time his crew had been called to assist in rescue at that particular area at Willard Peak, known as the London Spires. It was pretty technical rescue, Toll said. It's very steep. It's a vertical area with a lot of loose rocks. Heavy winds also played a significant role in Sunday's rescue of two men who were stuck 8,500 feet up, and it took them nearly 24 hours. Search and rescue crews from Weber and Box Elder County, they got down 28-year-old Kevin Curtis and 30-year-old Timothy Myers, both from Salt Lake City, after the two men became stuck on the mountain when rocks began to fall from a cliff they were climbing. Myers suffered a dislocated shoulder and injuries to his feet during the slide, and then Curtis was uninjured. See, I originally heard on this story that Myers suffered two broken legs, but this just quotes he had injuries to his feet. So not sure how severe the injuries were. But I do believe Toll went on to go and say that the men were prepared and they were experienced climbers, and had they not been injured, they could have got themselves out of the situation. But that's kind of normally the case. If you're not injured, you're just getting out of there.
Right.
So, but congratulations to the local search and rescue crews who helped with this and get the men safely off the mountain. For more information, you can go to the Standard Examiner, and also KSL has an interview. This is when you want to be interviewed, is when you're trying to, when you're in the hospital, right?
In a gown.
They did interview the man in a gown at the McCady Hospital in Ogden, and he kind of talks about the incident. So that's on KSL.com for more information. Also, Salt Lake family is suing the Salt Lake Boy Scout, or suing the Boy Scouts, because their son was killed by lightning at a camp last year on a scouting outing. They claim that the leaders weren't properly trained to respond to dangerous weather. The lawsuit filed by the parents of David Royborn and his best friend Sean Smith says the boys should have been instructed to seek shelter in a permanent structure rather than walk to a ridge top campsite further away. What are your thoughts on that? Lightning's lightning. It's going to hit. I mean,
well, being on a ridge is probably not as safe as being in a permanent structure.
That's what I was thinking.
But
yeah.
I think anybody, any 8-year-old scout, as well as a leader, should understand that if there's lightning, you don't stand on top of a ridge. I don't know. I think it's pretty silly that they're trying to sue the Boy Scouts. Accidents happen. You can't control lightning. But it does sound like a little bit of, I don't know if this is the right word, a little harsh stupidity on everybody's part involved, maybe.
Yeah, a little incompetence, maybe.
Yeah, incompetence, that's maybe the better
word. Yeah, which is sad because, you know, you trust the scout leaders, you trust them to make the right decisions in the backcountry. And so I don't know. I've never been in scouts. I don't know how much training the leaders actually go through, but that would be... it'd be a good thing. I mean, if they just had a basic first aid backcountry training or something, always would be,
you know,
relevant to the situation.
I've been a scout leader before, and I had to have CPR training and basic first aid training. That was, I think, it.
Yeah. Well, that's better than nothing.
Yeah.
So that's something. Good. Wish this was back when I was in high school. Prep mountain biking series has kicked off this last weekend. So. Yeah, you can officially be on a high school mountain biking team. This is out of Park City. A new chapter in high school sports began on Saturday as the Utah High School Cycling League staged its first mountain bike race at Round Valley east of Park City with more than 280 riders. You think they needed it? 280 riders participated.
Wow.
Making the starting line at the UHSCL, a chapter of the nationwide National Interscholastic Cycling Association. It's already among the largest in the country. For the first year of the event, you're always a little nervous, but today has absolutely exceeded our expectations, said Utah High School Cycling League Director Lori Howard. There's two A's. It's not Howard to make it easy. It's Harward. There's a great turnout of riders, fans, and volunteers, and it's a perfect start to the amazing opportunity for students across the state. So, these kids are going to race. They're going to get better at mountain biking, and the sport's going to continue to improve. So, congratulations to everyone who towed the start line with their bikes in this new mountain bike series. And, man, I kind of want to go back to high school now.
Yeah, no joke.
See, top honors in the varsity division went to Park City High's Cheater. He lives in Park City. He can go in the hills.
Memorize the trail.
Yeah. It was Brenna Egan and South Davis Compsites, Zach Peterson, who raced 3 and 4 laps respectively on the 4.5-mile loop. So, nice work, guys. Man, that'd be sweet. I always lock my car and try not to leave valuables in my vehicle when I'm parked at a trailhead, when I'm going up to a climb, or I'm trail running or whatever, because... I try to leave nothing in my car. So I try not to leave packs in there. Anything that's going to say to someone walking by, it's a bad guy, oh, that looks interesting, I could probably find some money in there. Well, these two girls, they went for a swim at the Hop Pots there, the Mount of Ogden. Not really a swim, a dip. I don't know what you say.
Soak.
A soak. Yeah, off 12th Street. And they were stunned around 11 a.m. to see a man rummaging through their car and then fleeing with their belongings. That's when the theft became a Kodak moment. The two women, one of whom is from Salt Lake and the other one's from Liverpool, England, they used a camera to take photographs of the burglars. He ran away, said Weber County Sheriff's Sergeant Ryan Hadley. And the names of the women were not released. But they took pictures. The one took pictures while the other one called 911. They worked geniusly together. The cop showed up, and Pete Gregory Garcia, 46, was the culprit. And they found him. He was down in the river. He tried to escape through the river somehow. And they found him, charged him for vehicle burglary, theft, and criminal mischief. So they said there's an ongoing problem with vehicle burglaries at trailheads and remote areas in Weber County. Lock your car, put valuables, put them in the trunk. It says under the seat. I would just put them in the trunk, or don't bring them with you. Leave your iPad at home. Do you take that stuff with you when you're going to go climbing? And
no.
Just leave it at home.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on. I've never seen this phenomenon in Utah. I've been to Alaska during the salmon, what do you call it? Salmon run?
Spawn.
Yeah, and it was amazing. I stood in the river up there. Now the river name escapes me. But the fish would, I mean, there were so many that they literally just bump your legs. You're trying to fish, and you're like, this is ridiculous. They're bumping my legs. But on September 22nd, the Kokanee Salmon Run will be on the Strawberry River. So for those who are into that kind of a thing, viewing day runs from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the U.S. Forest Service Visitor Center at Strawberry Reservoir. So it'd be kind of cool. Bright red fish in the river. Economy has resulted in a scrap of the World Cup snowboard competition in London. Recently, a mainstay of early FIS Snowboard World Cup season has been canceled due to financial concerns, organizers announced on Tuesday, which that's not good. It's the Snowboard World Cup Big Air Comp, and they're going to hold it in London, and it's been canceled due to, quote-unquote, economic reasons. Let's get things back on track, because, man, we don't want to be canceling events. And then typically when you think of slack, slackline, it's a climber sport, but the slacklining world championships are going to be at a skiing event this year. So it is the Gibbons Slacklines USA will host the championships at the Boston Ski and Snowboard Expo from November 10th through the 11th. Held for the first time in the United States, which I didn't know that, the World Championship is a competition where the world's top eight professional slackliners, they're professional slackliners. I didn't know that was an option. I will be picking up the new sport. They'll battle head-to-head for the overall title of world champion. But these days, you have to basically do like standing fulls, land to one leg, to a triple front, you know, whatever, land on one hand, balance in a handstand. For those unfamiliar with the sport, slacklining is the act of balancing along a narrow, flexible piece of webbing, which is low to the ground and usually anchored between two trees. Slacklining has become a recent feature of Madonna's current MDNA tour. Woof. Blow it up. Where three given athletes are performing with the Material Girl. Oh my goodness. Another reason not to see Madonna in concert. Yeah, but athletes are awarded points in the World Slackline Federation. Anyway, if you want to go see that, again, it's, what, in November? Yeah. November 10th through 11th at the Boston Ski and Snowboard Expo. Slackline World Championships. Actually, I think they should video it because I think it'd be fun to watch. So normally black bears aren't that big, but this guy shot one in Maine that was nearly 700 pounds. It's the state record in Maine. So he's famous now. But I feel bad for the bear. Here's a picture of the bear right here for those who cannot see in studio at this time. Big black bear, big bear, big bear. Remember that movie Great Outdoors with John Candy? And big bear, big bear. Yeah. So that's not good. However, on the bright side of things, in Kentucky, you can hunt Bigfoot now. So Eastern Kentucky, because Bigfoot is my favorite like non-existent animal. So Eastern Kentucky is known for its hunting possibilities. Deer, turkey, elk, and even black bear. But Bigfoot, not so much. This might be changing, however. As this is the second Bigfoot hunt in less than 5 months, it was scheduled for Saturday night, this last Saturday night, at Daniel Boone National Forest near Cave Run Lake. This would be awesome to go. I totally want to do this. Okay, the particular hunters were armed with nothing more lethal than infrared cameras and laser pointers. There's about 50 registrants, and 50 people paid $75 apiece to attend the event, which included afternoon lectures and presentations, and then they go out on like night hunts. Paranormal researcher Chad Morin said he paid $150 for a permit from the U.S. Forest Service for the night hunt, which was to last until 2 a.m. And it was a permit to hunt Bigfoot. Morin hosted another Bigfoot hunt April 21st. He said, "We saw so much weird stuff, we had to go make a second run at it." So he showed the infrared video footage and everything. But these guys are armed, man. They, let's see, where's it say? Participants carried a box of quote-unquote evidence kits that you purchase for $25, and it includes plastic bags, specimen cups, sounds like a bad dream, tweezers to collect Sasquatch scat and hair in the field. The kits also included ingredients to take plaster casts of footprints with, and a book titled The Beginner's Guide to Bigfoot Research was all included in there. It's kind of like a zombie apocalypse booklet or whatever, you know, kit, so that you're prepared for the end of the world. You're prepared to meet Sasquatch. And
how much did that cost again?
$50.
$50. Oh, I thought it was 25. 50 is a little much. I'll wait for a deal.
Yeah, they might have a spring hunt deal. I don't know.
Sale online something.
It's $150 to do the night one, and I guess everybody else goes out during the day. I don't know. I don't know if you're gonna see them during the day. Anyway, there was in parentheses here, somebody claimed to have seen Bigfoot, and I don't know where it is in this article. It's kind of a long article. I tried to pull out the most important parts there. Yeah, editor's note added September 12th, 2012. A participant in the Bigfoot hunt later told the Bluefield Daily Telegraph that she had seen Bigfoot during the hunt. Yeah, there you go.
Wow.
He's there. We just don't know it yet. So I wouldn't mind doing that and hanging out with those guys and just maybe wearing a monkey suit or something and giving them like a surprise. Yeah. Jump out from behind a rock and just be like, "Oh, I'm right here," and then just take off. Yeah.
You know, I saw a TV show one time, and they were looking through their infrared binoculars or whatever they have. And they saw this head pop out from behind a tree and then go back behind the tree.
Yeah.
And they said that was typical Squatch behavior.
That's you know, that's my favorite line, right? It's like, that is typical Squatch behavior. Because we know what typical Squatch behavior
right.
is. Yeah. Or the sounds, when they hear the sounds. Did you hear that? That was a typical Squatch yell or moan. That's a typical Squatch moan right there. Did you hear that? Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's so funny. It's typical Squatch behavior. Let's get to some events coming up tonight. For those interested and want to head down to Salt Lake, this is the Black Diamond's 19th annual Avalanche fundraiser, Utah Avalanche fundraiser. There's food from local restaurants, beer and wine, and live tunes from Urban Empire. There'll also be the legendary silent auction to support the Utah Avalanche Center, as well as grand giveaways for those who purchase advance tickets. The festivities are for tonight from 6 to 10 p.m. at Black Diamond in Salt Lake City. So those of you who are looking for a way to support the Utah Avalanche Center, you're going to spend some time in the backcountry this year, because it is going to snow this year as opposed to last year. This is a good way to donate, because it's kind of a party and you don't really feel like it's a donation deal, you know, if you're not really into that. You can always go online and just send them some money, but this sounds a lot more fun. This Saturday is the annual Mount Ogden Homecoming Hike, brought to us through Weber State University and the Weber State University Outdoor Program. There are three times on the hike, all meeting at Snow Basin parking lot. So if you're interested, it's like 7:15, 8:15, and 9:15. Be there about 15 minutes early. And some of us, including myself, is that something you were doing, Greg?
I don't think I'm doing that this year. I'll probably be there to hike.
We'll help you hike up to Mount Ogden Peak, which is cool. September 22nd, sadly, the Ogden Downriver Kayak Race presented by Gear 30 has been canceled due to the city not allowing they're not allowing the water to be released.
Yeah,
so
it's a drought issue.
Yeah. Boo. However, that is the finish day for the Salt to Sate bicycle race. I think I looked at it. It's over 400 miles.
Yeah.
What's loadage?
206.
So it's basically double loadage.
Right.
And they have a single racer entry on that.
They do. I don't know if anybody's finished it single yet.
Really?
I think every finishing team has been relay. I think there have been some close. I'd have to check. Maybe somebody has, but
yeah.
Yeah, pretty incredible.
So I'll actually be in St. George at the finish line, emceeing the finish line as the cyclists come across, and I know nothing about cycling, so it's going to be a good time. So if you're in St. George, come to the finish line of Salt to Sate and give me some tips on cycling. That is the same weekend as Xterra, so those of you who are going to stay in town, head up to Snow Basin and watch the excitement around Xterra. Lance Armstrong obviously isn't racing this year as he's been banned from like everything. He can't even race his car around the block anymore. I mean, I actually saw a tweet or a post from him, though, that said he was participating in some weird race this weekend. I don't know what it was. So hopefully he can do the local stuff and nobody cares. So I kind of feel bad for him for that stuff. September 26th is the Ogden premiere of the Jeremy Jones's Further by Teton Gravity Research. The award-winning producers of Teton Gravity Research are pleased to announce the production of Further, the second installment in the Jeremy Jones trilogy, Deeper, Further, Higher, presented by O'Neill. Further will explore some of the world's most extreme and remote terrain while continuing Jones's mission to camp deep in the backcountry and on the summits of unridden lines to access nearly vertical spines and wide open powder fields. That's on campus here. It's at $10 in advance on campus. You actually buy those through Teton Gravity, TetonGravity.com or TetonGravity.com, and then it's $15 day of show. It's at the Wildcat Theater right here on campus. So if you want to see this, and this is amazing. What I respect about Jeremy Jones is that he forgoes the helicopter drop-off method. Instead, he climbs the mountains himself. And they're not like Ben Lomond. They're in the middle of nowhere,
right.
British Columbia, Alaska, mountains. Wherever. So yeah, cool stuff. October 6th, if you're looking to run your first ultra, or you want to come out and cheer people on, the Antelope Island 5100K is October 6th. October 12th is the 9th annual Outdoor Gear Sale and Swap. This is the Season 4 Gear Swap. If you're looking to get some fresh gear, you want to sell your old stuff, you have a snowboard sitting around that's getting dusty, bring it to the Gear Swap on October 12th. It's the 9th annual Outdoor Gear Swap, and it'll be right outside here on the Waterfall Plaza, so everyone should know where that is and should be able to find it. And if you don't know and you're walking to class, you'll find it because there's no way around it. November 1st is the first day to reserve the WSU OP Yurt. Pick your weekend now. Set your alarm. Call the OP on November 1st and try and get the weekend you want. The weekends will go fast. Last year, not only did the weekends go, but the weeks went, and it was almost booked every single day last year. So be ready for that. Be prepared. On November 15th, there's the TGR ski board film. So not just the snowboard version, but the ski version of their latest and greatest. And then also encourage everyone to check out Weber Pathways website for their Wednesday night hike series, Thursday singles mingles hikes. You have to be 45 and older for that, though, Greg. Science hikes, wild edible hikes, and then also check the Ogden Nature Center calendar for their upcoming events as well. So, man, that was a lot.
That's a lot. Are you exhausted?
I'm tired. It's time for you to take over. So let's get into Ascent Life. This is the first segment or episode of Ascent Life, and we'll have to put together a little lead-in intro for it for next time. So you can find the podcast later at gear30.com. But for this introductory, we're right here on the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show. So again, this is the first installment of Ascent Life. We'll talk a little bit of news at first. I didn't know if you had brought anything new as far as news, or if you wanted me to take off on these predetermined stories over here.
The first blind man climbed the Grand Teton.
Yeah. Woman. No, man or woman?
Was it a woman?
I'm looking at the picture.
I don't know. I haven't read the story. I just heard you
Nancy Stevens, 51. Yeah, became the first blind woman to climb the Grand Teton. So, because there was a blind man's already climbed Everest. Right. So, if he goes to climb the Teton, it's like, big deal. He got up Everest, right? Yeah. So, August 22nd, Nancy Stevens, 51, became the first blind woman to climb the Grand Teton. Stevens is from Bend, Oregon. She made the ascent in one day, climbing with three friends and four guides. That's a lot of guides. Stevens needed no physical assistance during the ascent. She belayed her partners and rappelled on her own. The only aid she received on the climb was being given a general direction in which direction to climb.
Wow.
So that's pretty impressive. Yeah,
that's great.
The group began their ascent at 4 a.m. and they reached the summit at 9:46 p.m. Whew, that's a long day. And arrived back at the parking lot by... Well, that doesn't make sense. By 10:30 p.m.? That doesn't make sense. Something's wrong there.
How long?
It says they began their ascent at 4 a.m. The group reached the summit at 9:46 p.m. and then arrived in the parking lot at 10:30 p.m. where they get heli-lifted off of there.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right.
Okay. Who wrote this? Climbing Magazine. To get an idea of how hard it is to climb the Grand Teton without sight, try closing your eyes and walking to your mailbox. Says Ryan Burke, one of the team members from the Teton Adaptive Sports. Now pretend that mailbox is 8 miles away, 6,500 vertical feet up, with boulders the size of cars in your way. I think it's awesome.
Pretty incredible.
Nice job. Speed records on some iconic peaks. Now, I know I've been following the ultra running and trail running world here a little bit closer, and Killian Jornet, who's a Salomon-sponsored athlete, has been killing it, pun intended. he's only 24 years old. I didn't know he was that young. I thought he was like late 20s, early 30s or something.
Yeah, he's pretty incredible.
Young guy. He's a Spanish, they call him a Spanish ski mountaineer and sky runner. I had no idea he was a ski mountaineer. I just knew he was a runner. But he broke the 29-year-old record for running the Grand Teton, speaking of breaking records on the Grand, by racing up and down Gannett Canyon and the Owen Spaulding route in 2 hours and 54 minutes. This was about 12 minutes faster than the mark set by Bryce Thatcher back in 83. So, man, that took a long time to break that record. Was that 30 years?
Yeah.
Jornet set the time the day... Let's see, wait. Jornet set the new time the day after running the peak with Forsberg, a Swedish woman whose time of 3:51 likely set the female record for the climb and descent. Nice. Man, are you going for that? Is that like on the list of to-do?
Well, I was until he made it 15 minutes faster, whatever he did.
Yeah.
10 minutes.
At least 12, yeah. That's ridiculous. It's about 7.5 miles and 7,000 vertical feet each way. The upper... Owen Spaulding route requires exposed scrambling up to about a 5.4 in difficulty. At under 3 hours, Jornet's average pace for the round trip was under a 12-minute mile.
Wow.
Whoa, that's moving, dude.
Yeah, that's
that is
really
moving.
Fast.
Holy cow. Okay, I'm stoked when I run 12-minute miles on the Bonneville shoreline. So, up the Grand? Oh, man. All right, sweet. Time to start working out, I guess, if you want to beat that one. Mount Rainier bodies identified. Cause of death determined. I don't know if you heard anything about this one either. I didn't know they were... Now, you've been up Rainier, right?
Yep.
The Pierce County Medical Examiner's Office in Tacoma, Washington, has released the identities of two bodies recovered on Mount Rainier last week. Michelle Trajanowski, 30, of Atlanta, Georgia, and Yornsork Yang, 54, of Springfield, Oregon. They were found Friday on Paradise Glacier at about 8,200 feet near snow-buried campsite, scattered with gear. They are two of four people who disappeared during the blizzard in January. Oh, my gosh. So it took them like 6 months, eight months or more to find them. For more on how they were discovered on Mount Rainier, visit rockandice.com. Trajanowski's partner, Mark Vurek, 37, of Agoura Hills, California, was found earlier last month as the snowpack receded. So, sad.
That is sad.
So does that mean they were climbing in January, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty... That's not easy.
Must have been...
That's cold.
Buried by an avalanche?
Or? Yeah. Now, you know what's interesting to me, though, is they said they were at 8,200 feet, I believe. Was that Blinky?
It was.
Was Blinky? Let's hope this is Todd. Is this Todd at the top?
Am I the 11th caller?
Sorry, you're number 10. Welcome, always Todd.
Hey, buddy. Hey, greetings from Long Beach.
Yeah, you're calling to
our... the mainland side, yes. Just for the day. Well, yesterday and today.
Okay.
You want to know the reason why I came over town?
Yeah, I do.
To see, amongst other things, to get 4 new tires for my car. Thank you very much. And to see Raiders of the Lost Ark on iMac.
That's awesome.
I got priorities.
I know, yeah, I know. Did you have to take work off?
No, I was already scheduled off. That's why I worked this out.
Okay, yeah. That's...
So to see Raiders of the Lost Ark, it cost me like about $100.
So. That's awesome. Well, that's good. Well, yeah, you called. We're right in the middle of running through some news stories with our Ascent Life section.
Sweet.
So, yeah.
Well, I'm listening as you were, gentlemen.
All right, sweet. Well, this is a little bit more. I know you sort of, Todd, follow more of the global scene as far as maybe heating and warming and cooling transitions and these kinds of things. So this story is along that guideline. The Mount Everest Sherpas, they're angry with how studies of glaciers and glacial lakes have been conducted in recent years, according to a report from the BBC. If things don't change, they threaten to no longer allow studies to be performed in the region. The situation has become such, said Zimba Zengbu Sherpa. That's his name.
Nicely done.
Yeah. He's president of the Nepal Mountaineering Association, and he says that many Sherpas in the region do not even want to hear the words climate change these days. The failure to include local people in scientific research has resulted in sudden panic when the results of glacial studies finally trickle back to the community through media reports. So in other words, the locals who have lived there forever are sitting there saying, how come no one asks us what we think, basically? And the scientists are like, because we don't really care, bro. So yeah, the local leaders are also concerned that not enough attention is being paid to glacial lake outburst. I'm not sure what that means. And that too much attention is being paid to the Imja Lake, while other more dangerous glacial lakes are being ignored. So they, the locals there kind of want in on the deal. And for more information on this, it's both at the BBC and from Outside Magazine. Sherpa, hey, help a Sherpa out, all right? They deserve some love, for crying out loud. I have some climbing stories, but we'll come back to these. I had Sausage to Julian was named 2012 Arco Rock Legend. Did you write something on your blog about the rock legends? I swear I saw something.
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Different blog. Sausage to Julian, she's a cutie, and she's a really good climber. So, yeah, she was named 2012 Arco Rock Legend. Good honor. Let's chat a little bit of gear. Ascent gear, climbing gear. Tell me about the Star Wars jacket.
The Marmot Star Wars soft shell. Yes, the Naboo. This is a soft shell that I saw for the first time about a month ago. It's a new soft shell.
From who again?
From Marmot.
From Marmot?
For Spring 13. It's pretty cool. They came out with what was called the Zion soft shell jacket. It's made of Neo shell.
Uh-huh.
And they made it into a soft shell.
That was
jacket.
Kind of a big deal.
One of the only soft shells on the market made of Neo shell. And using that jacket, I can vouch that it performs incredibly well. Breathes extremely well. It just you never feel clammy in it.
Which activities did you use it in? Like
mostly ice climbing? And snowshoeing. With that said, there were a few complaints that I had, and
they listened to you.
And they listened to me, and they made a whole new soft shell. I'm surprised they didn't name it after me.
Yeah, I know, right? That'd
but,
be sweet.
But it was a little bit heavy. Had too many pockets. It wasn't perfect.
They have like an iPhone pocket or something.
It was right. Yeah. So they made a perfect one, and they called it the Naboo.
Okay.
And it's a lighter jacket, still Neo shell soft shell. Kind of got a real light gridded fleece interior.
Sweet.
And less pockets, a little bit longer hem so it doesn't pull out of your harness when you're ice climbing. And
okay.
I think it'll really be the jacket to look for in January.
But yeah, so what you're saying is it's not available to purchase for Christmas gifts this year. You got to wait till after the first of the year.
Yeah, January 1st is when it's released. So
you'll be able to ice climb with it in January, February. Find it at your local retailer shop. But that's the Marmot Naboo.
Yeah.
Yeah, sweet.
And I think it's going to be a great one. There's another jacket. There's a jacket that came out a couple years ago called the Rab Infinity jacket.
My dream jacket.
Your dream jacket. Yeah. Got an insane amount of press. Really got a lot of awards. Really incredible jacket. 16 ounces, really warm. Well, OR.
Outdoor Research.
Kind of sort of ripped off the the Infinity jacket and came out with what they call it.
They were inspired by it.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Inspired by it, yes. I'm new to this radio thing. I'm gonna tick off a lot of people. they were inspired. They ripped off.
They ripped it off.
So Outdoor Research was inspired by the Rab Infinity, and they made their own.
It was about time. It was about 3 or 4 years, right?
Yeah, at least a couple years. Made of the same fabrics, Pertex Quantum, one of the lightest nylon shell fabrics on the market. Really watery, weather resistant, super light, pretty durable. 800 filled down. It looks real similar to the Quantum. The baffles are shaped a little different, but there are a couple upgrades.
Okay.
Which make me like the Outdoor Research Incandescent hoodie a little better. A couple things. It's a little bit longer. The Infinity jacket goes, when I put it on, it goes about down to my belt.
And you're 6'1"?
6'2", yeah.
6'2", okay.
But I have a pretty short torso, 18-inch torso.
Yeah.
And so
that's
got a pretty short torso, and so... So the OR is just a little longer jacket, a little trimmer jacket, not as boxy of a cut.
Okay.
And Outdoor Research has an unconditional lifetime warranty.
Rab does not?
No questions asked. Rab has a nice lifetime warranty against manufacturer defect.
Okay.
Which is the standard in the industry. That's a good warranty.
Yeah.
But Outdoor Research took it a step further, and they said, we don't care what you did to it. We'll cover it no matter what.
So, yeah, that's the one we need to throw off a cliff and see what happens.
Right.
Yeah.
So with that jacket, I love that warranty for ultralight gear.
Uh-huh.
Because when you buy ultralight gear and you're using it, you're always worried that you're going to ruin it. You're going to rip a hole in it or something like that. With that warranty, you don't have to. You can enjoy using the product without worrying.
Is the price structure similar to Rab's?
Same price, actually.
Yeah.
$325, I believe.
Okay. Is that something that's going to be available this fall for those looking for Christmas gifts?
It is.
Yeah. Sweet. Local retailer.
Really. And the colors are awesome.
And that, again, is the OR...
Incandescent hoodie. Yeah. 16 ounces. Technically, they listed it 17 ounces. I weighed one on my postal scale, and it was 16. So.
And it just folds into its own...
Into its own pocket, fleece-lined pocket. You could use it as a pillow for backpacking.
I like that idea. Yeah.
Or it's got fleece-lined pockets to keep your hands comfortable.
So. No, I have a my own stuff sack for my mid-layer poofy. It's a smaller poofy, and I stuff it in there, and that's what I use for my pillow. Yeah, but when it gets cold, I put it on and I go without a pillow.
Right.
Yeah, cool.
So cool jacket. Good one to look for this year.
So, yeah, OR incandescent hoodie. Next, there's a couple new helmets out, I guess, in the climbing world. Two of our favorite brands, Petzl and BD.
Yeah.
Yeah, what's the difference between these, and what do they offer?
Well, the Black Diamond helmet is a sick-looking helmet. It's really, really a nice-looking helmet.
Has a cool name.
Vapor, yes. It's about that light, too. 6.6 ounces, or 187 grams.
Okay.
The way they did that is they took just a foam like they use in a bike helmet, made a bunch of cutouts to lighten it up, and then they sandwiched a Kevlar carbon film between the foam and the shell to give it more structural integrity, a little more protection against rock fall and stuff like that. It's one of the lightest helmets on the market.
Still work rock hits you on the head.
According to their testing, yeah. According to the standards, it's as safe as anything else out there, just a lot lighter.
Awesome.
And at the show, they had it hanging from the something with a little
outdoor retailer
fishing
show.
Line. Yeah, at the outdoor retailer show. So it looked like it was floating.
Yeah.
And when I saw it, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
And then I went to Petzl right
because it was
after.
Floating.
Right. Well, I couldn't believe how light it was. It's just such a nice-looking helmet. So light. And then right after that, I went over to Petzl, and they have an even lighter helmet.
They have their own version, and it's like,
and it's even lighter.
So then it comes down to like style or what brand you like or something.
So the difference between the two is the Petzl's is butt ugly.
What's the Petzl name?
The Petzl Sirocco helmet.
The butt ugly helmet. Petzl doesn't like us anymore.
Oh, shoot. The Petzl Sirocco helmet. Can I say butt on the radio?
Yeah, you can.
Okay.
Yeah. You just can't say that girl walking by has a nut. Yeah.
Right.
That would be bad.
So the Petzl Sirocco helmet. So the BD Vapor helmet is 187 grams. The Sirocco is 165 grams. You know when
really
they're measuring
close.
In grams that it's pretty
You're not going to notice it on your head, probably.
The difference is the BD helmet, and most climbing helmets and bike helmets, they use a type of styrofoam to make their helmet. Well, Petzl uses polypropylene instead of polystyrene, which is styrofoam.
Okay.
So it's a different type of foam and a different type of... they make it a little differently. And the helmet actually flexes, and you can kind of squish the helmet a little bit.
Interesting.
You can stand on the helmet, and it squishes down about an inch or two. And in their studies, they show that with hard hits from rocks and different things from above the head, it actually takes out some of the force.
Makes sense.
And it doesn't damage the helmet nearly as badly. Like with the styrofoam helmet, you get hit once hard on
You probably
got to
replace your helmet.
Replace the helmet. Yeah. This one could take more hits.
Interesting.
And
so if you're not into the whole style of things, this one may be the way to go.
Yeah, if you like climbing with a hood on, so that it covers the helmet and nobody can see what the helmet looks like. It's a great option.
It must be really ugly.
It's pretty ugly. But really a pretty cool helmet. It is $100, retails for $100. The Black Diamond helmet retails for $140. So what you're getting with Black Diamond, obviously, it's a really nice looking helmet as well as really lightweight and full safety. So
then do you know if either one of the poly... styrofoam thingies, one is more environmentally friendly than the other, or is there any information on that?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, just curious. Cool. Well, there you go. So there's new helmet options. Are they out? Are they in stores? Are they available to purchase yet?
I think they're out next spring. Spring 13.
Next spring.
So probably available in January.
So we are ahead of the game today with this stuff. So awesome. And then finally, another brand that I have never heard of, and I've never even heard of a body pack. So I don't know what a body pack is, and I haven't heard of Arn. Arn is the company. So tell me, what is an Arn body pack?
Okay, so Arn body packs, they're a company out of New Zealand. They've got the same suspension system as some of the new Black Diamond, newer Black Diamond packs that have kind of the rotating hip belt, shoulder strap.
Backpacks, okay.
Cool suspension. The Ergo Active suspension, I think they call it.
Okay.
So Arn is actually the original pack that uses that suspension. They came up with that suspension and Black Diamond.
They were inspired by.
What was it, Todd? Not ripped off.
They were inspired by it,
right. Yeah. So they were inspired by Arn backs. I don't know exactly where BD got the idea. Both ideas are great. But Arn uses that same suspension. But what makes them a body pack is their packs have an option that you can add capacity to the front. They hook onto the hip belt in front of your body and hook to the shoulder straps. So instead of having 50 pounds, 40 pounds on your back, you can have 20 pounds on your back, 20 pounds on your front.
Interesting.
And it distributes the weight a lot better.
It's a body pack.
It's a body pack. It's not a backpack.
And Arn is what?
A-A-R-N.
Okay. And are they distributed in the United States yet? I mean,
they are. Yeah. Out of Colorado Springs, and not very many specialty shops will have them.
Yeah. Gear 30?
Ogden's Lucky. It will have
them.
Interesting. Now, the idea sounds kind of goofy.
You know what I thought of when you explained it to me? I thought of like Ultra Spire or something, how you can piece stuff together on your pack. Yeah. Is that similar?
Yeah, it's sort of kind of the same idea. Okay. Kind of, but not at really. All the same.
Okay.
The cool thing about these packs is for backpackers, that's going to be pretty nice to have the additional weight on the front. Obviously, for climbing, when you're climbing up a rock, you want your body close to the mountain. The extra packs in front aren't going to be helpful.
Right.
But they've got that cool suspension that really allows for some good movement while climbing. And they make climbing packs, they make backpacking packs, okay. They make ultralight packs, all good quality.
You know, my mom, she wears like a fanny pack on the front side when she's backpacking so she can access like inhalers and cameras and tissues and snacks and this kind of thing.
Right.
So I'm wondering if this pack would be good for someone like that who does like to have pockets on the front and they can just access that stuff immediately without having to take your pack off and get into the back of it and that kind of
thing. Yeah, absolutely. It's,
I think if that's the case, then moms have been on the cutting edge with the fanny packs for a long time.
Yeah.
Fanny packs are cool. They just nobody knows it yet. Yeah.
How do they look? What do they look like? Does it look kind of funny having the weight in the front?
Yeah. Yeah. It
does. It's kind of a cool idea. I think I'd be claustrophobic having it all the way around me.
What's nice is that each pack in front has a stay, and the stay inserts into the hip belt, so the weight's distributed to the hips, and the pack actually leans away from your body just a little bit. So you've got airflow through your body. From the reviews I've read, people say it's not hot, it's real comfortable, carries loads better than any packs they've ever used. I have one on the way sent to me to test out, and I might have some more information.
So this is like the intro. So this is, look for these and then we'll test it. Greg will test it and we'll see.
Yeah. Definitely innovative. Yeah. Whether they really take off, I don't know, but innovative, and that's always a good thing.
Cool. So. Awesome. So watch for Arn packs or body packs.
Body pack.
Sorry. Jeez.
Yeah. I believe the website's Arn, A-A-R-N, bodypacks.com, I think, or just search it.
Cool. So I think is that all you had for gear? It's all I had written down here.
Yeah, I think that's it for today.
So as far as skill sessions go now, and this is something that I just think it's more confusing and more every time a new jacket comes out, down, it gets like water resistant down, and then you get, your, what am I trying to think? The synthetics are just amazing. So they're like, we got this new synthetic that's as light as down now. And it's like, well, is it as light as down?
Right.
And like, how do you... Let's do this. Let's do the skill session. That's understanding insulation, down versus synthetic. What do we need to know?
Yeah, so this is a big...
in like 3 minutes.
3 minutes. So down versus synthetic. Everybody knows down doesn't insulate when it's wet.
Yep.
Synthetics generally do better, but not great, but better. They now have water-resistant down that soaks up a lot less water, dries quicker. Still not as good as synthetic, but better than the original down in nasty weather. But it's really confusing sometimes. You'll see on a down jacket it says 800 fill or 600 fill, and a lot of people think that means, the 800 fill is going to be warmer because it has 800 whatever fill compared to 600 fill.
That's what I think anyway.
Right, But actually, all that means that's the quality of down that's in it. So 800 fill, it's called fill power. 800 fill power down is a higher quality down than the 600 fill power down. It means that you get more loft for the weight out of an 800 fill.
But if they
down.
Put less in it than a 600 fill jacket has, if a 600 fill jacket has a ton of down in it, it could be warmer than an 800 fill.
Right, exactly.
Okay, I get it. Okay.
So the way they measure it is they get a cylinder, a graduated cylinder. They stick an ounce of down in the cylinder.
I don't know what that is.
They get a cup.
Okay.
A glass cup that has measurements on the side.
I'm going to dumb it down for me.
They put an ounce of down in the cup, and then they put a circular piece of metal that fits in the cup that weighs 68.40 grams.
Okay.
They stick that on top of that ounce of down, and it'll compress the down a little bit, and then they measure where it gets to. And however many cubic inches that ounce of down fills up, that's its fill power. So if you get 800 fill power down, it fills up 800 cubic inches of down with that weighted piston on
and
it.
And everyone uses the same
Generally, when they measure down, they use the same thing.
We don't have cheaters out there that are like...
Right. Okay. So what that means is if you get 600 fill down, 1 ounce will fill up 600 cubic inches,
okay,
which is less loft than 1 ounce of 800 fill, which is less loft than 1 ounce of 900 fill.
So the 600 could be heavier.
Right. So if you get a jacket in 800 fill and a jacket in 600 fill that are the same warmth, the 800 fill is probably going to be lighter.
Okay.
Not only that, it's higher quality down, so it's actually going to last a little longer. The reason why it's higher quality is because the down clusters are from more mature birds, and they tend to be more resilient.
We all know how well mature birds perform. Yeah.
Right.
So... that's kind of...
And when you say last longer, it just means that they'll hold their loft for a longer period of time. You can stuff them and take them back out.
You compress them and they'll loft up again.
Okay.
I mean, a good down garment taken care of will last 20, 30 years. Synthetic one, 5 years.
Okay.
So synthetics are measured based on how heavy the synthetic is per square yard.
Okay.
And so if you get a synthetic jacket that's a 60 gram insulation, that means it's 60 grams per square yard for that type of insulation. You can get all types of insulation. Primaloft's probably the nicest synthetic out there right now. And so if you get a 40 gram Primaloft jacket, that's not as warm as a 60 gram Primaloft jacket, and that's not as warm as a 100 gram Primaloft jacket. That doesn't mean that the jacket weighs 100 grams. That means that the insulation used weighs 100 grams per square yard.
Okay, good to know.
So kind of confusing, but
A little more.
I was going to say it's almost too easy to understand. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's confusing for me because I'm not very smart.
Whatever.
No, this is all good stuff. This is good stuff.
So, anyway.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Greg. I appreciate it. Bringing us the first installment of Ascent Life. So, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
No problem.
That is it for this week's Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show. Todd at the top, I'm so happy you could join us and listen in.
Hey, me too. Even 30 minutes. I'm glad I could as well, yeah.
You'll be happy to know that our friend Aaron Ralston, who has kind of helped with the advocates as far as the Southern Utah, I don't remember that conservation group that he was a part of, but they got enough signatures finally to deliver a petition to Governor Herbert to keep Southern Utah pristine. So that is part of the My Land segment. This week's quote of the week, mountains are not fair or unfair. They are just dangerous, says Reinhold Messner. He would know. Look for us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, OgdenOutdoorAdventure.com. Any parting words there, Todd, at the top?
No, enjoy the last days. Fall and winter are coming.
I'm glad you continued. Enjoy the last days. I was a little nervous.
The end is near.
Yes, the end is near. As John Muir would say, the mountains are calling and we must go. Thank you for listening to the Ogden Outdoor Adventure Show on 88.1 Weber FM, Ogden's radio station. We will leave you with Lights, Ellie Goulding. This is the Bass Nectar remix. So enjoy. I had a heart then, but the queen has been old.